Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, June 9th, 2026. As always, we begin with today's top headlines and stories. The first headline reads, it's actually just a large photo of a young man with a fishing pole, and I believe he has a fish at the end of his line. It's called Catch of the Day, and he's in a hoodie standing out in next to a river, lake, sunny day. In between rainstorms on Monday, recent University of Illinois English graduate Hunter Meyer found himself winding down from work at Urbana's Crystal Lake Park, admiring the fruits of his first cast, a hookful of algae. Meyer said he normally frequents fishing spots in Clinton and Mahomet, but chose to catch and release in Urbana on Monday, using his new Toem fishing rod and reel purchased for $15 at an estate sale. He weathered the rain to indulge in a rediscovered childhood hobby. For more of our photographer's work, you can visit us at Instagram. This photo is taken by Rob Lacates for the News Gazette. Yes, it didn't quite look like a fish when I looked at it, so it looks like a clump of algae. Well, he caught something. Next up, Champaign County Court. Two charged for alleged roles in Friday melee. Man suspected of firing gun, woman of punching an officer. This article is written by Luke Taylor, who can be reached by email at ltaylor@newsgazette.com. The article is based out of Urbana. Two people arrested following a large melee Friday night appeared in court Monday to be arraigned for their alleged involvement. Anthony Teat, T-E-A-T, 42, and Jessica Morris, 33, both of Urbana, both face charges after an event that Urbana Police Chief Larry Boone said, fortunately, resulted in no serious injuries, but it's the kind of thing the community needs to come together to resolve. It keeps me up regardless of what day of the week it is, he said. Anytime my phone rings at an unusual hour, my heart rate goes up just a bit. Police responded at 10:12 p.m. Friday in the 2000 block of South Philo Road for a report of a fight involving as many as 60 people, as well as reports of gunfire. Boone said it's an area of the city where his department is looking to expand its footprint. I think that's going to be a long day in addressing some of the major issues as well as the major issues. Some of the social ills that affect that area as well, he said. According to Urbana Police, the incident started out as an argument between adults and escalated to multiple physical altercations. A firearm was discharged multiple times into the air, but no one was struck by gunfire. Officers recovered a Smith & Wesson handgun as well as six spent casings at the scene. Teat was charged with aggravated discharge of a firearm and aggravated domestic battery. He was assisted in court Monday by an American Sign Language interpreter, ASL, who appeared over video call to translate the proceedings for him. The charges accuse him of firing the shots investigators learned of and choking a family or household member. Champaign County Judge Brett Olmsted ruled he would be held in jail overnight. He'll return to court this morning for a hearing on whether he will continue to be held until the resolution of his case. Morris was charged with aggravated battery to a peace officer and aggravated battery in a public space. According to the charges Olmsted read in court, she allegedly punched an officer in the face as he was carrying out his duties and another individual in the head. Like Teat, Morris will be held until a hearing on whether she will be detained until the resolution of her case. However, due to a high volume of hearings set for this morning, she'll remain in jail for a second night and have that court appearance Wednesday morning instead. Teat and Morris were also each ordered to have no contact with the alleged victims in the battery cases. As a follow-up to that, tune in Urbana Police Chief Larry D. Boone joined Monday's episode of News Gazette Radio, powered by GTP's insurance. You can visit newsgazette.com/podcast to give a listen. Also, as a quick follow-up, inside sports, Illini land Lincoln Williams. Illini land Lincoln Williams, a basketball recruit from Kankakee, in B1. So we'll see if we get to any sports today. Next up, around the area, America's 250th, painting the town red, white, and blue. Villa Grove artists, patriotic imagery adorns windows of downtown Tuscola. This article is written by Luke Taylor. Again, Luke can be reached by email at ltaylor@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Tuscola. As the nation's 250th birthday approaches, iconic American imagery is beginning to appear on windows around downtown. The paintings are the work of Libby Nethery, Neathery. The artist behind Villa Grove-based Libby Joe Art Studio. That's Libby, L-I-B-B-Y, Joe, J-O, Art Studio. She's working with the Tuscola Tourism Committee on a project aiming to celebrate the holiday, but also give folks a reason to come downtown and take a look through the windows of local businesses. The goal is just visibility and physically bringing people out downtown as far as a business perspective, Nethery said. From an artist's perspective, it's nice to just play on the imagery of the 250th and bring some creativity to downtown. The designs aren't simply patriotic imagery. They also include a scavenger hunt people will be able to complete once Nethery has them all done. Outside of the general theme, Nethery said she's had a lot of freedom to decide what to paint and how to paint it, which is enjoyable for her as an artist. That's the part that I enjoy the most, actually, is coming up with the ideas and the scavenger items and tucking them in, she said. For this 4th of July display, she's planning to include symbolism, paying respect to all the branches of the military, as well as historical imagery and landmarks from around the country. I'm really trying to focus on the things that make America, America, Nethery said. Nethery works fast. She expects to have the project done within about 3 weeks, definitely in time for July 4th. Once completed, the paintings will stay up through Labor Day, so there will be plenty of time, or there's plenty of time, to enjoy them. This won't be her first time working with Tuscola Tourism. If you've seen windows painted up for the winter holidays, that was her doing too. She said she expects to be busy this summer with projects lined up in other parts of Tuscola, as well as at businesses in Newman and Villa Grove. A lot of the smaller towns and businesses are really embracing the 250th and wanting to have their businesses and everything decorated for it, Nethery said. While window painting is a major part of Libby Joe Art Studio, Nethery also hosts events and creates all other types of paintings, from more permanent murals to smaller illustrations and even face painting. When she first opened the studio, window painting wasn't even something she offered. I actually just painted my windows seasonally on my business, and I would say the word just spread from there, Nethery said. The other local businesses, like the banks and a lot of the really supportive community in both Villa Grove and Tuscola, started having me come and do theirs, and it grew from there. While it wasn't something she expected to do, Nethery said she fortunately does enjoy painting windows, so it's working out well for her. Even on the days that it's very stressful running your own business, I still think it that at the end of the day that I'm painting something every single day, Nethery said. It's hard to be upset by that. I'm really happy with how it's shaped up. Last year, her studio took third place in the News Gazette People's Choice Awards in the art gallery category, and she's been nominated to compete again in 2026. Voting is open online, and more of Nethery's art can be found across social media. And there are two nice photographs that accompany this article. One is of a woman sitting on a ledge and kind of putting her arm up to show her window. There's three window panes. The center one says 250 years and in a circle, and the two other panes on both sides of it are American flags that say 2026. Artist Libby Nethery, owner of Villa Grove's Libby Joe Art Studio, shows off one of the many window paintings she has created for downtown Tuscola in celebration of the nation's 250th birthday. That photo is provided, and the other provided photo is her standing next to a colorful, it's red, white, and blue, swirl of the numbers 250, July 4th, 1776. Libby Nethery shows off a window painting she created in downtown Tuscola. Great work. Next up, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Ryan Tompkins, that's R-Y-A-N, last name Tompkins, T-O-M-P-K-I-N-S, remembers the exact moment he watched Hoosiers for the first time. 1986, at Wings Theater on Gerard, G-A-R-R-A-R-D, Street in Rantoul. I think tickets were $1, he said. All these years later, the movie still has an impact on the longtime Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School boys basketball coach, his players, too, as it turns out. Last weekend, after years of planning, Tompkins and his Falcons enjoyed a Hoosiers field trip to Indiana. It started at Butler's Hinkle Fieldhouse, we made sure to bring the tape measure, and ended with a summer league game against Deer Creek Mackinac in the home gym of the mythical Hickory High in Knightstown. In between, the Falcons toured Newcastle Fieldhouse, the world's largest high school gym, and the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. Players, coaches, and support staff, Dave and Carrie Dornbush, ran the clock, and Norm Schall kept the book, enjoyed every minute. Tompkins has made it a point to show his teams and social studies students Hoosiers at some point during each school year. The interest and conversation it generates from the younger crowd some 40 years later convinced him to pursue what turned out to be a great trip, quote-unquote, he said. At newsgazette.com podcast, head to our website to hear Thursday's edition of News Gazette Radio featuring our conversation with Tompkins. And there's one nice photo that accompanies this. It's provided. It's in a gym. Just a large group of people, looks like coaches and support staff, and then the actual team. Go Hickory all the way is this big, huge sign that is above them, but it's a basketball court in the gymnasium. Looks like they had a great trip. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can always reach out to Jim Rosso for ideas for this article. You can reach him by email at jrossow at newsgazette.com. Next up, history. Area history. In 1926, Twin Cities residents recalled their shock 24 years ago when a tornado struck with a roar like all the freight trains rolled into one. The cyclone tore off the roof of the Knowlton and Bennett building and choked the streets with fallen trees and debris. Part of the roof of the Thornburn School was found the next day at the fairgrounds. Holy Cross Church in Champaign, a wooden structure in 1902, was twisted from its foundation, and the courthouse was badly mussed up. One woman died of fright. The wind velocity was not recorded. That was 1926. In 1976, developers would be allowed to erect apartment buildings of virtually unlimited height near the University of Illinois and would not be required to provide parking for residents under a proposed ordinance being studied in Champaign. The ordinance would also allow businesses to occupy up to 25% of an apartment building. The ordinance was drafted by the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, which is trying to untangle the vacancy rate and ease traffic congestion in Champaign. In 2011, every morning and afternoon on school days, 35 buses stop to unload and load students on the west side of Danville High School, temporarily closing all three lanes of Jackson Street to traffic. Now engineers have come up with two different ways of staging the buses. One idea calls for designating the two lanes closest to the school for buses during drop-off times and keeping the third lane open to other vehicles. The other calls for moving bus activity to the east side, or the other calls for moving bus activity to the east side of the building. In international history, today's highlight, on June 9th, 1973, Secretariat won the Belmont Stakes by 31 lengths, winning horse racing's Triple Crown, and setting a still-standing record by running the 1.5-mile dirt course in 2 minutes, 24 seconds. That record still stands from 1973. The next headline reads, healthcare. Lawmakers try to appease both sides in drug pricing controversy. This article is written by Peter Hancock and is based out of Springfield. You can reach, this is for Capital News, Illinois. You can reach their newsroom at news@capitalnewsillinois.com, that email address. Illinois lawmakers gave hospitals and community health centers much of what they wanted this session by passing a bill that prohibits drug manufacturers from interfering with their access to discounted medications through a federal drug pricing program. But they also gave drug companies what they wanted by passing another piece of legislation that calls on the Illinois Department of Insurance to conduct an audit to find out how much money these hospitals and clinics are making off that program and what they are doing with the profits. Both bills focus on the federal 340B drug pricing program. Although it is established under federal law with tens of billions of dollars of healthcare revenue at stake nationwide, it has increasingly become the subject of state-level political battles as well. Launched in 1992, the 340B program requires drug manufacturers that participate in Medicaid to provide outpatient medications at substantial discounts to providers that serve large numbers of uninsured, underinsured, and Medicaid patients. Those providers, in turn, typically mark up the price they charge their patients for the drugs and use the difference to support their operations. As the Medicaid program has grown, so has the 340B drug program. According to an analysis by KFF, a nonprofit health policy research, polling, and news organization, the 340B program mushroomed in size in recent years, growing from $2.4 billion in drug purchases nationally in 2005 to $66.3 billion in 2023. That growth has resulted in heightened tensions between hospitals and clinics on one side and the pharmaceutical industry on the other, with each side accusing the other of abusing or manipulating the program. The 340B eligible hospitals and clinics have accused drug companies of unfairly restricting their ability to contract with outside pharmacies to dispense the discounted drugs to their patients. That limits the volume of 340B discounted drugs. Drug manufacturers, meanwhile, have accused hospitals and clinics of profiting off the system instead of passing the savings on to their patients or using the profit they make from the program to offset their cost of providing charity care. The battle in Illinois over the 340B program began last year when the Senate adopted an amendment to House Bill 2371. It was sponsored by Representative Anna Moeller, Democrat, Elgin, in the House, and Senator Dave Kohler, a Democrat in Peoria, in the Senate. passed in the final week of the 2025 session, it called for prohibiting drug manufacturers or any other party from interfering with the ability of a 240B qualified hospital or clinic to acquire the discounted drugs. That bill also prohibits drug companies from interfering with the hospitals and clinic's ability to dispense the drugs through contract pharmacies. There's a photo that accompanies this article. Again, this is Capital Coverage. It's of three people at a table with laptops and microphones. Representative Camille Lilly Wright testifies before a House committee for passage of a bill calling for an audit of the federal 340B drug pricing program in Illinois. That photo is taken by Peter Hancock for Capital News Illinois. The next headline reads, Champaign Police Coroner IDs 16-year-old killed in Saturday shooting. This is collectively written by the News Gazette and is based out of Champaign. A shooting early Saturday morning in northeast Champaign claimed the life of a 16-year-old. Champaign County Coroner Lori Brower said Sunday that Trayvon A. Wesley, that's T-R-A-I apostrophe V-V-O-N-E, A. Wesley was pronounced dead at 1:05 a.m. in the emergency department and Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Responding at 12:06 a.m. to the 2000 block of Cynthia Drive, police found Wesley with life-threatening injuries from a gunshot wound. He was taken to an area hospital where he died. Police said 911 callers reported hearing shots and officers said multiple rounds were fired. Property damage was reported in the area as well. No arrests have been made and the investigation is ongoing. Anyone who has information, especially residents or businesses in the area with surveillance cameras, is asked to contact Champaign Police at the following phone number, 217-351-4545. That's 217-351-4545. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. The next headline reads, Sunvest, S-U-N-V-E-S-T, Solar, LLC. Solar farm proposed for East Mohammed. This article is written by Jana, J-A-N-A, Wiersema. And she can be reached by email at J-W-I-E-R-S-E-M-A at newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Mohammed. A Chicago-based solar energy developer is planning a new solar farm on the land south of Lake of the Woods Road and north of Interstate 74. Sunvest Solar, LLC, seeks a conditional use permit to create a ground-mounted solar development on about 23 acres of vacant land at 205 Ranch Lane. The site is in the single-family residential zoning district, according to village planner Abby Heckman. The concept plan shows that the array would be located in an approximately 13.7-acre area within a fence. At the June 2nd meeting, they actually stated during the public hearing that they plan to purchase the property, Heckman said. It's not like a lease of a partial piece or even a lease of the whole piece. Sunvest Solar describes itself on LinkedIn as a developer of community solar projects, along with projects for commercial and industrial customers, utilities, co-ops, and municipalities. Per its website, Sunvest is currently on track to exceed 280 megawatts of operating projects by year end 2026. The company's integrated platform and deep development pipeline position Sunvest to reach 1 gigawatt of assets under the management by 2030, officials said. Over 30,000 homes are powered by Sunvest's operation. That's over 30,000. and it is developing projects across 18 states. The Plan and Zoning Commission has recommended that the Village Board approve Sunvest's requested permit with conditions, Heckman said. Per her report to the Commission, Village staff recommended several conditions for the project, including that the development must substantially comply with the submitted site plan and that the site will be accessed through Lake of the Woods Road and not Ranch Lane. Additionally, the conditional use permit, if approved by the Village Board, will lapse if construction has not begun within 1 year of approval. An extension of 1 year may be allowed if the applicant shows good cause. Delays in the interconnection of the intended solar energy system to the utility grid shall constitute good cause among other items, Heckman wrote. She told the News Gazette that in addition to the stipulations suggested by Village staff, the Commission added conditions in regards to the following items. There are four. One, landscape screening requirements if the site is accessed at night. Two, dust mitigation during construction. Three, limits on temporary storage at the site. Four, a secondary gate over the access drive near the Lake of the Woods Road entrance to prevent unauthorized access to the site. Access to the site is proposed through an existing commercial site and not through a residential street, Heckman wrote in her report. After initial construction, solar developments like the one proposed tend to be a quiet neighbor and have minimal movement on and off the site. The north side of the site contains existing trees, which should provide a visual buffer. The Village Board will discuss the conditional use permit application at its June 16th study session and could vote on the matter as soon as June 23rd, Heckman said. The Plan and Zoning Commission also recommended approval of Tin Cup Village LLC's proposed senior housing development on about 7 acres south of Tin Cup Road and west of South Fox Run Drive. The recommendation includes several conditions, basically tying the site plan to the approval along with some other zoning considerations, Heckman said. And there is one photograph that accompanies the article. It's actually a rendering or a design of the layout of where the solar panels will be. Sunvest Solar LLC seeks a conditional use permit to create a ground-mounted solar development on approximately 23 acres of vacant land at 205 Ranch Lane, located south of Tin Cup RV Park and some residential homes. The concept plan, this is what it is, some concept art, shows that the array would be located in an approximately 13.7-acre area within a fence. The next headline reads, actually, it's a quick look at our weather forecast over the next few days. Today, the high will be 88, mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming mostly sunny, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, southwest winds 15 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, even hotter, the high will be 91, the low is 72, mostly sunny. Southwest winds will be 15 to 20 miles per hour. Thursday, again warm but rainy. The high will be 90. The low is 73. Partly cloudy, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Friday, the high will be 84. The low will be 67. It will be mostly sunny. And Saturday, the high is 87. The low will be 62. And it will be mostly sunny. So a little warm out there. Try to stay cool. It's a little muggy and humid as well. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, July 9th, 2026. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back to read part two of the News Gazette with you shortly. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful day.